Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, July 10th, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, and I'm working from my home studio in New York. Well, on Thursday, the Washington Nationals finally got their World Series rings. They are big, and they are bright. Dave Martinez, Steven Strasburg talked about them.
Definitely worth the wait. We waited a while to get these things on our finger, but I look at it, and like I said, it's all about, you know, all the work that we put into this, the players, the way we did it, you know, the way the players did it, and just means a lot to me, means a lot to my family. So I'm proud to be wearing this thing today. And we're here again, hopefully to get another one.
You know, you just look at all the little things that they put on the ring to kind of commemorate some of the big moments of the season, and it kind of just takes you right back to that moment. And they did a great job on it, and they really put a lot of time and effort into making it something special. And I got a little nervous at first because on the outside of the box that it came in, my last name was spelled wrong. So luckily it was spelled correctly on the ring, so I was pretty happy about that.
So back in April, we had Dave Martinez in the podcast, and he mentioned at that time that during the shutdown, he was doing a lot of carpentry. And I texted him yesterday after I saw those rings, and I was like, man, you're going to have to build like another wing on that house in order to fit that ring because it's so big. And he texted back how awesome he thought they were. Cubs manager David Ross talked about keeping everything fun as they go through this summer camp.
Yeah, I mean, mentally, you want to make it fun. The goal is to get great work in and have these guys enjoy themselves. We do our best work when we're having fun. We'll stay out there longer when we're having fun. We've had a couple warm days here lately where I want to get those guys their work in and get them out of here. But, you know, the more we can do to lighten the environment and make it fun for these guys, the energy that the coaching staff brings, you know, the video board coming into play, having some walk-up songs, all those things matter and can be a distraction from the downtime, so or the quietness that there is. So we'll try to just keep things enjoyable, and these guys understand that they've got to get serious work in. The focus is there, and when we don't see that as a staff or I don't see that as the manager, I'll say something. But right now, these guys are doing a great job.
So as these teams begin to ramp up, they're playing some inter-squad games. The Jays' Bo Bichette hit a home run in the Jays' inter-squad game yesterday, and he spoke with reporters yesterday about the club's confidence.
We're getting ready for a different kind of season two, no fans. So, you know, when the season starts, we're going to have to learn how to create our own adrenaline. And so I guess we're kind of practicing that now. You know, there's not a whole lot of adrenaline when you're facing your own teammates. It's more of a live beat. It's more of like a practice scenario. So we're just going to figure out how to get as ready as we can, get that adrenaline going to the best of our ability on our own merit, and see what we can do. Everybody's come here focused, ready to go, ready to get the season going. I mean, there's a lot of optimism in this clubhouse, a lot of confidence. So we're just excited to get going.
The Blue Jays, by the way, added Austin Martin, who was their first round pick this year out of Vanderbilt, the fifth overall pick. They just signed him the other day. They've added him to their 60-player pool. The Giants' Buster Posey continues to be away from that team. Manager Gabe Kapler has not been specific in talking about what's keeping Posey out. He just has said that Posey is in the midst of a personal decision. We heard from Buster Posey the other day that he's not sure about whether or not he's going to participate. Billy Hamilton of the Giants is on the injured list for medical reasons not specified. Veteran pitcher Hector Noesi opted out of the restart. Daniel Norris of the Tigers is tested positive for the coronavirus. The Washington Post has a story this morning that multiple players took one of two Major League Baseball chartered flights from the Dominican Republic to Miami on July 1st. Have tested positive for coronavirus. That's according to several people with knowledge of the situation speaking with the Post. Players and staff members were not tested before boarding the planes, according to six people with knowledge of the travel logistics, lending more skepticism to baseball's restart plan. Meanwhile, in this country, the daily reported infections were up to about 60,000 per day so far this week. That is obviously a huge concern. The Major League Baseball Players Association issued a statement yesterday quoting recent public comments and how they do not reflect the umpire's stance regarding the coronavirus. The statement did not mention Joe West by name, but it certainly seemed to be in reaction to comments that West has made recently. Joe said the other day to USA Today, those statistics aren't accurate. I don't care who's counting them. And Major League Baseball released its schedule for 2021. Before we get to Boog, Shambi, and to Todd Radom, Season 8 of ESPN's latest 30 for 30 podcast is coming next week. Heavy Metals, Inside the Karoly Gymnastics Empire, is a groundbreaking 7-part podcast series that takes listeners on a deep dive into the lives and influence of Bela and Marta Karoly, the most successful and controversial coaches in USA Gymnastics history. Subscribe now to the 30 for 30 feed on Apple Podcasts to listen to the trailer. The whole season drops Tuesday, July 14th on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
The man.
Swing and a high fly ball out towards left field.
The voice.
That one well struck. On its way. Out of here.
The legend.
And this place is going bananas.
Boog Shambi on Baseball Tonight.
Yeah, Boog Shambi was already a legend in North America, and now he's a legend in South Korea. Boog, how you doing?
I love me some me. I missed that open. I just want to hear that over and over again.
I don't know why you need that, given the treatment that you've gotten from the teams in South Korea, the super fans, people coming out for you. They're writing up songs for you. You're tweeting them out. You got pictures of yourself in the back. It's like perfect for you.
It's no, the league's been great. Shout out to Daniel Kim. He's been incredible in terms of a knowledge base, and just, he's a guy we go to get, you know, just background stories, all the stuff, the stories that you and I love so much. It's been fun. It's been fun. You know, you get a chance, you're learning something. You're getting a chance to learn something. It's cool.
And we get you right after you do a game broadcast. So you are fully caffeinated, flying and going, yeah. But I gotta tell you, and look, you're a professional. So, you know, whatever the challenge would be, you would answer the challenge. But I remember hearing when we first we started talking about doing the games in South Korea, and you were mentioned first as someone who's going to be doing the play-by-play. One of my thoughts was, man, Boog's not a morning person. I wonder how that's going to be for him, you know, and what kind of a challenge would that be for you? You know, you and I joke about when we bump into airports on travel days, how you run away from me because I'm a morning person and you can't stand being around me. So I am curious, just sort of earnestly, how you've made that transition into this job where I'm assuming you have to get up at like 3 o'clock in the morning, 3:30 in the morning to get fully rolling by 5:25.
All right. So let's start with a couple of things. The part that's difficult, and where it's difficult to be me, and I've made this point before, is that I'm not a morning person, but I'm not a night person either. I'm just a person. Like, I don't know where my sweet spot is, but like, I'm not staying up till like 2 in the morning either. So as far as this, I would be slightly argumentative and say, yeah, getting up at 3 a.m. isn't a morning person. Like, someone who gets up at 6 is a morning person. Getting up at 3 a.m. is offensive. And I would say it continues to be offensive. But it's
and I feel like that's a cheap shot, Boog. I feel like that's a cheap shot when you saying that.
That's right. Yes. No, it's weird, but it's quirky. And I would say this. It's weird, and you know, you get up to do it, and I get up most of the time at about 3. But I feel like I'm doing it with a smile on my face, just because, you know, it's a little more casual, and you know, we're trying to play. You know, I mean, look, above all, you know that I'm playful and I like to have fun with stuff. So it's been it's definitely been different. I would say, you know, when I get up, the days I get up at 3, usually by noon or 1, I'm, you know, out of gas and need a little nap time. So it's been a transition. There's no question. And it's just funny when people text you and come across you at, you know, 6:30 a.m. when you're calling a baseball game.
Yeah. And you guys have been doing a great job of that. I suspect it's probably for you, as someone you've been a baseball broadcaster for more than 20 years. But this probably, doing the games in South Korea, might be a little bit more like the work you do in college basketball, where you kind of drop in on a team, you kind of drop in on a league intermittently versus having regular daily contact with the league. Yes?
It's a great point. Yeah, it definitely, it's that is what it's like, because, you know, we've gotten to see the NC Dinos a decent amount, but that is, it's sort of like doing, you know, when I'm doing the Big 12 and we're in conference play a little bit, and you get, you know, a team a few times. But yeah, the prep's different. And if you haven't seen a team in a while, you kind of got to, you know, go back to school. So it definitely is. I think that at least for me has been an apt comparison. It's definitely not the way it is, you know, with following a big league season.
Give me a favorite player that you've gotten to a point now when you hear, oh, we're going to do that guy? Okay, perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I think Yuji Yang has been the catcher for the NC Dinos has been, you know, one of the guys that I've really liked. But I think probably Jung-Hoo Lee is the right fielder for Kiwoom. He's only 21. Got a wonderful swing. His father was an MVP in the league. And he, you know, he wears 51 for Ichiro. I would, you know, and this year he worked on his swing. He changed his swing to get a little more power. But I think we're seeing one of the elite talents. So he's the guy that I like watching hit the most. And there aren't a ton of good outfield arms. He's got a great outfield arm. So Jung-Hoo Lee, 21 years old, I think has a chance to be a major league, I mean, really good player. So it's been cool to watch him, you know, swing it for Kiwoom.
And you've set precedent, I believe, during these broadcasts. You moving forward for the next 20 years, we're going to hear the phrase Boog Cam, which is the camera low home plate. And the reaction, the angry reactions of the pitchers, the ball strike calls, right? That kind of developed organically during the course of these broadcasts. And man, you guys are going to have a lot of fun with that.
Wow.
But you do get some great reactions.
It's such a funny thing. So they don't show a ton of emotion. Like, the one thing that's been interesting is when a hitter gets robbed, the hitters don't snap. They don't throw their helmets or anything like that. But the one emotion that you do see is the pitchers beefing with the strike zone. And the feed that we take from Spo TV, they like to show it. It's a great point. It's funny to sit there and watch. They go low home and just this facial reaction from countless pitchers So I started, it was with Eduardo, and I would say, you know, low home pitcher complainer cam. And I would say, oh, there's our shot from low home pitcher complainer cam. And then Eduardo just started saying, and there's the boog cam, and there's the boog cam. And then, so instead of low home pitcher complainer cam, it became boog cam.
And, you know, I'm really looking forward to that day, which isn't that far off, maybe a couple years away, when the boog cam will be capturing the images of major league pitchers complaining about the electronic strike zone, which will be so much fun. Like, you know, they throw a pitch that they think is a strike and the electronics say no. And the pitchers are like, really? And they're getting mad over those calls. So I'm glad we now have a specific name for this, because we'll be referring to that for years. All right. And I want to talk about some stuff. I'll save the coronavirus stuff for later, which is, it feels like right now, like the dark and ugly part of our conversations here. Yesterday, the bids were submitted for the New York Mets. Steve Cohen, who had been in the bidding before, had offered $2.6 billion. That fell apart. He offered reportedly $2 billion yesterday. Our friend Alex Rodriguez, Jennifer Lopez, their group offered $1.7 billion. Steve Cohen also made an offer for the SNY network, which was something that he has wanted all along. I've been told by sources that Steve Cohen is like the guy at the poker table with the highest pile of chips. And in the end, if he wants the team, he's got the most money, and it's very possible that he'll wind up with the team. Either way, Boog, I found myself, as we get closer to this happening, thinking, you know, such happy thoughts for Mets fans and for Major League Baseball. I think this will be a great thing. And I don't mean that as a, you know, knock on the Wilpons. I tell friends all the time, and you have friends who are Mets fans like I do, say, look, Fred Wilpon loves baseball. Jeff Wilpon loves baseball. The fact is they don't have as much money as a lot of other owners do, and so they haven't spent aggressively. Moving forward, after this sale is accomplished, how great will it be, not only for Mets fans, but for baseball, that we're going to have a Mets franchise that looks like it's going to go toe-to-toe with the Yankees and be able to manifest fully in the same way that we saw the Dodgers manifest fully after the Guggenheim Group took over?
It's such a good point, and I don't think nationally. Now, you and I are both located here. Full disclosure, I grew up a Phillies fan, so in case anyone wants to cite bias or anything along those lines. But I grew up, and I was in high school in the 80s, from 84 to 88, right in the middle of that Mets run. And to be perfectly honest, my childhood went from 11 to, you know, and then 24. I mean, the Yankees didn't make the playoffs after they went to the World Series in 81 until they got there in 95. It was a Mets town. It was the Mets and Don Mattingly for over a decade. Like that, it was a Mets town, period. I don't know that we'll ever get back there, but the Mets have a great fan base, not a good fan base, a great fan base. A lot of displaced Brooklyn Dodger fans who are really passionate. But a consistency of a plan, spending money, smart baseball people, if they combine that, I think people would be amazed at how powerful, you know, the Mets could become, and just, I mean, just how big a player they could be consistently. I'm with you in terms of if they have somebody that, you know, with that level of money, they, you know, there are a lot of Mets fans. People like the Mets. So I completely agree that with an ownership group that has a willingness to spend, but also is smart enough to let baseball get good baseball ops people and let the baseball ops people make, you know, run their plan, the Mets could be, you know, a big time player.
I loved how you described Mets fans. And in anticipation of this conversation today, I drove my daughter to the airport, and on my drive back, I was thinking of ways to describe the different fan bases. Like when I think of Orioles fans, I think of O's, right? When I think of Cardinals fans, I think of the absolute uniformity of the sea of red when you go to their ballpark. Everybody wears red in their ballpark. When you go to Milwaukee, you walk through the the tailgating, which seems to be unique to that franchise. And this is what I came up with the Mets fans. And you and I know so many great Mets fans, like Pete McConville, who we worked with. He was one of the producers at ESPN. This is what I came up with. The phrase, until death do you part.
It's
like a wedding vow for the Mets fans. And they can't stand their team about three quarters of the time.
They have some Red Sox sensibilities to them in that they always think the sky is falling or is about to fall, but they are passionate and love their team.
No doubt about it. All right. I want to ask you this week, a lot of conversation about the Cleveland franchise changing their name. Among all the possibilities that you've heard, which one was appealing to you, the most appealing?
I mean, I think from a marketing standpoint, I like the Spiders. I understand the only argument against it is how bad that team was over that stretch. But I think that Spiders would work amazingly. I think you could have a field day marketing that. And I don't know, man. I maybe as I get older, I just, you know, it's like Universal DH. I mean, look, the game's changed, but I'm fine with it, man. You know, like, I don't want to watch pitchers hit. I grew up a National League fan. The pitchers don't even get to hit anymore. They pitch five innings and you pinch hit for them anyway. I think it's time, you know, to let it go. You know, if they change the name, whatever they change it to, if they change it to the Cleveland Onlys, everybody's going to be fine. Everybody's going to be fine. So if they do that, you know, the same thing with the Redskins, it'll be okay. And I think to be sensitive to people with that heritage, I think is the way you want to go.
Yesterday, Anthony Rendon of the Angels spoke with reporters and he talked about how, and the comments were so classic Anthony Rendon, who's so glib.
I'm good.
Yeah, and he basically said that the piped in noise at these ballparks, and you're experiencing this in the KBO broadcast, are quote unquote dumb. His quote was, without a doubt, it's like you have two of your senses that aren't coinciding with one another. It's like you're looking at a pizza, but you're smelling a hamburger. You hear noise, but you know no one's in the stands. You don't see anybody. I think it was dumb. I'd rather listen to music. Boog, what say you about what they should do with the sound at ballparks?
I think what I think they should do is I think for the most part they should give fans the option on what they want. I think players are going to want it though. I do think that they're going to want like a little something. I do think they should have some fun with it maybe and do like a once a week completely silent game or something along those lines just to spice it up. But I think people will be surprised, you know, even if you don't like it, I think you'd be surprised at, I really do worry about it subtly affecting level of play over a long haul, just no sound in the ballpark. I don't think players fully recognize. I know that, you know, it's Verlander and that's Aaron Judge at the plate and that's all well and good, but man, after a while, you know, it's dead in there. And those cues that tell the players this is important, I worry a little bit about it affecting things and just the juice. I can tell you this is completely anecdotal, but I talked to somebody who works in the English Premier League. And since coming back with no fans in the stands, the general consensus, the players hate no fans in the stands. And the general consensus is that the level of play after the delay and no fans in the stands has been terrible.
Wow.
Terrible.
Which, yeah, I mean, look, for years we've heard from players talk about how much adrenaline they draw from the fans. So it absolutely makes sense. And in a sense, you know, with the piped in music, you're right. Maybe that it's like Pavlov's dog, right? You put on the music, you get some drama going in the ballpark with the sound system, and that probably will help the players. I will tell you that as a reporter, and I talked about this with Ravi earlier in the week, part of me hopes like there's no sound because I'd love to hear what the players are talking about. And I really hope that we can catch that on microphone, that'd be awesome. I think it would last a day.
Yeah, I know it.
Because once we were to capture some of the conversation, the Players Association would go, no, we're not doing that. And I agree with you. I do think that the players, generally speaking, they like having, you know, that that sound. I think they react to it in ways that maybe they don't necessarily anticipate. All right, let's get into the nitty gritty. Yesterday, last night, Washington Post posted a story in which it was written that there were a couple flights that came up from the Dominican Republic chartered with players on it, and some players were not tested. And since they've come here, you know, they have tested positive. Other people have been around them, you know, seemingly have also caught coronavirus, although that is not absolutely confirmed. But to me, Boog, as I read this story, it's just confirmed everything that I've been hearing on the ground at the team level, how they feel like this whole thing right now is just Swiss cheese and there are holes in it. And that's just the reality of the moment. And it's just a question of how lucky they are. You know, the Russian roulette, that they don't have a rash of positive tests and that someone doesn't get really, really sick or, God forbid, worse.
I'll tell you, one of the things is the sort of the merging of the, I think there are two main issues. I think there's the player health issue and then what's happening outside of the bubble of the teams. Not that it's really a bubble, but because I think that, you know, that will impact stuff. I don't care, you know, if it continues to go up in Arizona or in California or Florida or Texas, you know, the fear, like, can you play a Major League Baseball game in X city where they're 15% over capacity of ICU beds and you know you're doing something that puts people at risk and puts people's family at risk? So that if someone were to get really sick, it'd basically be like, would you really be playing baseball games, even in a bubble, in the middle of New York City in April, this past April, when just everything was shut down and cases were spiking like crazy? So there's that. What if somebody gets really sick in an area where hospitals are completely overwhelmed? I think that frightens me. And then it's so challenging. I mean, the debate on the science part of it is baffling to me in terms of just expertise. You know, if you fall, and I don't understand it. It's if I were to fall and blow out my knee like anybody else and my knee really hurt, I'd go to a doctor and then the doctor would say, I think you need an MRI. And then they take the MRI and then they say, you tore your ACL. I think you should get surgery. And nobody would sit there and go, I think you're wrong. That's your opinion. Like, they wouldn't do it. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't make sense. But like the guy, you know, that went to school like Anthony Fauci forever and has been in this job. Yeah, that's your opinion. And it doesn't. And look, here's the thing. It doesn't mean that the surgery on my knee, it can be wrong. It might not go well. It's not like they're infallible, but they're going to deliver the best process in the same way. It doesn't mean these guys, this isn't to say these guys can't be wrong, but yeah, let the experts be the experts. It's maddening to me. I'm sorry. I needed to spit that out. It's just, I'm tired of it.
Yeah. Boog, the other day, I got a tweet response when I just tweeted out, cause you get this question constantly. I'm sure you do too. Why doesn't MLB just follow the KBO model? And so I just tweeted out the numbers about the number of cases in South Korea, which has never been over 100 in about 2 months. And then here we're getting 60,000 new cases a day. So the context is completely different. And I tweeted that out, and one of the responses was, in so many words, I really like it when sports writers push the agenda of science. That phrase, the agenda of science, to me, it made me laugh so hard.
Kill me. Yeah, no, well, I mean, it's funny when you look at why is Taiwan, Japan, and Korea, stopped it? Well, because everybody wears a mask, and because of testing, those two main things. I mean, We had Daniel Kim on yesterday. We were asking him, you know, because they were looking at fans coming back. So I said, well, you know, when do you think fans will come back? He said, well, there's been a spike in Korea. Now, not Seoul, in the country, a spike of around 50 cases. And our country is looking at a spike of over 50,000 cases. Think about how, so like, you know, again, it's not apples to apples, but the next time you want to think about, you know, how far are we from fans coming back? Think about that. They're not putting people into the stands in Korea because of a spike of 50 cases. And you want to know whether you're going to be able to go see NFL, college football, NBA, college basketball anytime soon? Good luck.
Couldn't agree with you more. And I do feel like that the conversation will continue to evolve as all these various leagues, colleges shut down or push back or postpone, or at, as we saw with a number of you know, college football leagues yesterday. All right, sir. I appreciate it, Boog. Nice job.
Buster, thanks, pal.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world. Or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, how you doing this week?
I'm doing well, Buster. It's All-Star Week. Wait a second.
Well, which is appropriate because we have a doubleheader with you this week. You know, it's given it's All-Star Week, we're bringing in our All-Star. A lot of response to your segment, and I felt like you steered public opinion in some regards, because a lot of the responses that we got, you know, they were sort of veering away from spiders and veering toward sense of place. And a lot of people writing in suggesting captains, commodores, pilots. What do you think?
Buster, I take all the credit in the world for being an influencer of that proportion. And yes, I have been thinking a lot about captains in particular. There's a minor league baseball team called the Lake County Captains, I believe. I think there's a deal probably to be made there if need be. But think about captains. It's very neutral in a lot of way. It could be reduced to caps. Which, okay, Washington has caps, but we can have that too. I think there are a lot of very positive things about these lake connotations, the likes of which you just laid out.
Vincent Hannum, one of our followers, sent us a Bleacher tweet, and he suggests the Cleveland Eries, E-R-I-E-S. What do you think?
You know, it is. It might take some getting used to there. Erie could have multiple connotations, not necessarily all good. Ghostly visages, things like that. You know, I'd be willing to throw it into the mix.
Kevin Seipold writes in, how about the Plain Dealers? Of course, the newspaper in Cleveland is named the Plain Dealers. I can't imagine the players ever going for something like that.
No, I can't imagine that either. And, you know, we can talk all day about the unfortunate demise of newspapers, too. But Plain Dealers doesn't roll off the tongue. You got to have something that rolls off the tongue because we need to market this team.
All right. This week we're having a conversation about new Yankee Stadium and old Yankee Stadium. You and I have spent a lot of time in both ballparks. Let's talk about old Yankee Stadium first, to just set up your for lack of a better way to describe it, your credentials on assessing Yankee Stadium Because even though you grew up a Red Sox fan, you kind of liked old Yankee Stadium, yes?
Buster, I grew up something like 8 to 10 miles straight down the road or up the road from Yankee Stadium. And I was a Yankee season ticket holder at one time. You probably don't know that. Back in the Stump Merrill years. And I'll tell you what, Buster, my Yankee Stadium experience goes back to the original, the OG Yankee Stadium. Briefly, my father at various points in his working career was, you know, a copywriter, a graphic designer, photographer, and he had, as a photographer, this client called Empire Sporting Goods. And I remember being taken out of school at the age of maybe 8 years old, spending a day for this photo shoot with him and some major league players at the old original Yankee Stadium. And just imagine being 8 years old in this cavernous, gigantic place and being able to wander around for the course of an entire day back when the monuments were actually on the field.
Wow.
And just imagining the ghosts of Ruth and Gehrig and all that stuff. But anyway, to get to the, you know, the renovated Yankee Stadium. Yeah, I mean, you know, I went there hundreds and hundreds of times. You know, it's just part of my formative years, and I miss the place.
Yeah, I do too. I love going and covering games there. You know, especially in big moments, the way that the outfield stands would seem to be rocking and rolling. An interesting quality in big moments. And I got to say, and I've always wondered if this was because I grew up in a small town in Vermont, and so the idea of New York City in itself was daunting to me. But it always seemed like Yankee Stadium actually intimidated opposing teams. You know, where it felt like that players went in there, and because of the history of the franchise, because of the, you know, the way that the stadium was and the history behind it, and then the fans, it was intimidating for visiting players to go in there. Yes?
Without question, Buster. And I think that part of it is literally the architecture of the place. If you remember, that upper deck was so incredibly steep that it rocked up and down. It contained noise in a way that we cannot imagine in the current ballpark. And the bleachers were big. You've got the subway right in front of you there. I mean, it was a pretty small footprint for a pretty big stadium, but it was incredibly intimidating. And what a cacophonous place. And just real quick, you know, I'm thinking back all these memories. I went to game one of the 1977 World Series with my dad, Yankees Dodgers, 12 innings. And I remember that game ending super, super late. Game started a little bit later back then. Yeah, they were shorter, but this was a 12 inning game. And I just remember the sound of that place. Unbelievable.
It really was. And that brings us to New Yankee Stadium. Let me lead off with my feelings on it, because as you know, for me, it's all about utility. And I like the utility of the place. You know, for me and my job, moving around the ballpark is pretty easy. You know, it's got a nice handy elevator. You go downstairs, you're in the clubhouses fairly quick. I can't say that it has anywhere near the soul of the old place, though. It's not even close. And I also think this, you know, I attended some of the games at Yankee Stadium as a fan. Man, it would take a long time to get out of old Yankee Stadium, especially in the, you know, in the upper decks where the concourses were so small that you could be standing for 15, 20 minutes before it felt like you were even moving down some of those ramps. How do you feel about New Yankee Stadium?
Well, speaking of the old, yeah, I mean, it was charming and had a lot of history, but it was a fire trap. It was a charming fire trap in that respect. The new Yankee Stadium, and I'm just going to come right out here and say it, I agree with you. It is, you know, I've been waiting for a sense of stink to get on it. I remember saying back in 2009, team wins the World Series first year there. They've got history in there now. And I feel very wanting. I feel very wanting for history. And I cannot help but think, Buster, of the fact that at the old place, you could see the monuments from everywhere. In the new place, the design of it is such that the monuments, all of that great history, the plaques on the wall are hidden. They are hidden away. Yes, the ballpark regained the beautiful frieze, that ornamental element, all around the entirety of the ballpark, and that is a signature thing. You just can't help but think it's too big. First of all, it epitomizes the modern arena / stadium. Just so much retail, very, very expensive from a fan standpoint. Of course, it's New York, so it's not going to be cheap, but it really doesn't have a whole lot of personality or soul.
Yeah, I remember when they first opened it, the initial, and I'm sure you remember this, the seats right behind home plate in that lower bowl, the initial cost was $2,500 per seat per game. So if you wanted to get four tickets behind home plate, it would cost you $10,000. Four season tickets for four tickets behind home plate, like $810. It was like, wow. Yeah. And that's
I've had the good fortune to sit in those seats.
Yeah.
And it is an elevated oligarch 1% experience, the likes of which I don't often get to do. But if you recall also, Buster, the years shortly after the opening of the ballpark, we're still coming out of the financial crisis. So people in the banking industry and the Wall Street folks who lubricate the economy of New York, maybe they didn't want to be seen down there. Given the circumstances of a healing economy, and the optics were not awesome, because even now, you know, it just looks empty back there, and it doesn't add to a real sense of excitement much of the time.
No, that's you're 100% right. All right, let's get to this week's quiz.
All right, here we go, guys. Week 18, the Cardinals and White Sox are scheduled to play a game in Iowa on August 13th. The first MLB game to be played in that state in modern history. So here's this week's question. Which one of these states has never hosted a regular season MLB game? Is it A, New Jersey, B, Indiana, C, Rhode Island, or D, Louisiana? Has never hosted a regular season MLB game. New Jersey, Indiana, Rhode Island, or Louisiana?
All right. Taylor, what you got?
Oh boy, I like this question a lot. I think I'm gonna go New Jersey. It seems so obvious that the Yankees or someone would have played a game there, but I'm gonna say New Jersey. Everything's legal in New Jersey, but baseball.
Oh my goodness! You know what's really, really awful about this is that I think, Taylor, that you are right, but I am behind, and I'm not totally sure that New Jersey is right. I have a decent feeling about a plan B. Oh no, I don't like this.
You shouldn't have let me go first, Buster.
Oh man. All right, I got to roll the dice because I got to try to catch up. I'm going to say B, Indiana.
You're both wrong because it's Louisiana.
Wow. Okay.
So a couple of things. The Brooklyn Dodgers, on their way out the door en route to L.A., played a series of games in Jersey City at Roosevelt Stadium in the late 50s before they went west. Indiana, by the way, hosted a game on June 22nd, 1902, a Washington at Cleveland game. There were a couple of others in there. And Rhode Island had Boston Braves in Warwick, Rhode Island in 03. But Louisiana, you figured there'd be a game in New Orleans at some point, a regular season game. I guess there were some exhibition games at the Superdome, but nope, it's Louisiana.
Yeah, 100%. I thought, you know, because from time to time, you know, New Orleans has been mentioned as a possible expansion city. That would be a way to market that. I just assumed at some point there probably was one. Oh, man. Well, I feel a little bit better. At least my answer was a little closer than Taylor's was. And I'm going to build off the momentum for next week.
It all comes down to Jersey, guys. And Taylor's right. Everything's legal in New Jersey except for baseball. I'm going to quote him on that.
Thanks, Todd.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Friday. We ran through a couple names with Todd already. So let's get to Ghost Runner on Second Pod. How good a case does Bartolo Colon have for the Hall of Fame, assuming, of course, he never stops playing?
Yeah, and we've seen video of him working out this spring. He actually has never announced his retirement. I think he'd like to come back and pitch. He's someone with 247 wins in his career. He certainly has had the peaks in his career, but here's why he's never getting into the Hall of Fame under the current circumstances. He tested positive for PEDs. He was suspended for half a season. Barry Bonds has been held out because of suspected links to PEDs. Same thing with Roger Clemens. And until those guys get in, Bartolo Colon will have no chance.
Bummer. All right. That does it for a short version of Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And shout out to everyone listening on the weekends as they're going around the house, mowing the lawn. Any weeds to pull this weekend, Buster?
Oh, tons. Yeah, I've actually got a lot of weeding to catch up on because as we get started the ramp up, like my perfect lawn is regressed. And so this is going to be an important catch up weekend for me on the lawn maintenance. How about you?
None of that. I was hoping to spend a little pool time this weekend. I'm still in Long Island and it looks like it's going to rain here in the state of New York. So that's kind of a bummer.
Man, yeah. After all the time we spent inside, absolutely.
I know.
Well, that's it for today. My thanks to Taylor, to Boog, to Todd. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we should fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight. The podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.